Sweet business deserves its time in the sun. So the perk obviously had to change. So it now refills the magazine on picking up special or heavy ammo instead of primary, which pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's just like we had to make the perk work. I think that like this is, it's infinite ammo, but this perk is going to trigger a lot less. So maybe it's a wash, maybe it's a small nerf or something like that.
But you're a Titan and you have Actium War Rig.
Yeah, so exactly. That's all that matters.
Does it really matter?
Yeah.
I can fire it for 45 seconds straight now, and I won't run out of ammo.
It's like Pocket Infinity, but an auto rifle.
And there will be people who, in fact, do just walk around the Crucible holding
down
the trigger.
There's 100% going to be a six stack of Titans day one with Actium War Rigs with Sweet Business, and it's going to go forever.
Well, now there is. So, firing line. So, didn't want to give away quite that much damage for free. The damage bonus reduced to plus 20% precision damage for all supported weapon archetypes, which is snipers, linear fusion rifles, and machine guns, and maybe some other stuff in the future. I'm excited about that. I like this perk. I was sad because I never... The weapons I had it on were linear fusion rifles and machine guns, which were not optimal choices when it came out.
Well, you should definitely keep an eye out for it in Season 15. Like, typically when we... like nerf or buff a perk that isn't available on much stuff, you should watch for that perk to be coming back, basically.
Slug shotguns?
Oh god. No, not slug shotguns.
I had an idea for a perk the other day that would make the try hard PvE crowd happy that they can't quick swap, is it'd be a perk that your rate of fire on a slug shotgun doubles for like a half second or 1 second after you swap to the gun, right? And so you could swap to the gun and shoot two shots and swap to the next gun, shoot two shots, and it would give them the same effect as the quick swap glitch, but it would take away one of their perk slots on the gun. I don't know. We don't have to talk about that stuff here. Anyways, other perks.
Well, just on that note, like I think that sort of thing generally is what we're trying to move to, where, yeah, you can have these super powerful effects, but you have to build around them to get there. You don't just get them for free.
Certain damage perks only affected impact damage on explosive weapons. So you have updated these. It's Kill Clip, Rampage, Adrenaline Junkie. So now the explosive damage will also be affected. So you're talking about things like grenade launchers, rocket launchers.
Exactly.
And just to clarify, does this mean that other damage perks like Swashbuckler, for example, were affecting both impact and explosive? Both numbers were always going up.
Yeah, there are a bunch of ways that we build damage perks, and some of them are compatible with explosive damage and some aren't.
Okay.
I think most of the high-profile damage perks will now work on explosive damage. There are a couple that we didn't hit, I think.
Okay.
And you fixed the rarity on recently shipped weapon perks. Now, to be clear, DMG already clarified this on Twitter, but yep. This is a sticking point. People got scared and were like, oh, you're making certain perks more rare on guns. But it is actually the rarity, like as it's displayed, like this is a legendary perk or a common perk or something like that, as it's displayed in like the API in the database. Yep. Not actually like certain perks only have a 5% chance to roll on this gun. All the perks are evenly weighted in the pool, correct?
Yeah, for all weapons in the entire game, all perks are evenly weighted. We never adjust those individually per perk.
Okay, cool. That will definitely sit well with a lot of people.
All right. So I'm curious about this this weapon visual effects change. So you say that they were all custom, and so you've rebuilt those to speed up the process of adding new weapons or updating old ones while updating the visuals at the same time. Does this mean that you now have like a library of visual effects that you can combine in different ways when you bring out a new weapon to kind of speed up the process, or what exactly is that communicating?
So like we have a super talented VFX team, and over the past few seasons, they've been working to basically simplify how we put VFX on weapons, so they don't have to build custom effects for every weapon anymore. And if they want to do like a different damage type variation of something, that will be much faster. Basically, it's going to make it easier for us to get VFX on weapons in the future.
Awesome. I definitely love laser light shows when I fire my gun. So that's cool. Okay, so grenade launcher, rocket launcher, visual effects, all updated. And then legendary fusion and linear fusion rifles now have distinct damage type charge visual effects. So that's cool. Near future, I realize we're getting into the zone where there's probably going to be not a whole lot that you can add that you didn't already share. So linear fusion rifles, caster frame swords, you acknowledge those are not where you'd like them to be. Expect some tweaks. Is there anything beyond that that you can share? Anything you guys are looking at that you're willing to talk about now? Or is that something that we need to leave alone?
Tell me you're looking at Chaperone. That's the only thing I need to hear.
I am looking at it. But yeah, we have to talk internally about what we want to do with that stuff. We don't have anything specific planned for Chaperone in particular.
Okay.
So these weapon changes that you make, they get planned out. I don't know that people in the community quite understand how far in advance some of these weapon changes get planned out, right? Like it's really a fascinating dance that you guys have to run through, where you're trying to preemptively guess what the next meta is going to be when you're making some of these changes, you know, possibly an entire meta early.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Like for example, so we just shipped season 13 and we only had weeks left of season 14 development. So we had like a couple of weeks to figure out what the meta was going to be and to make adjustments based on that. Because like when you're making video games, you need to have everything locked down like a couple of months before ship generally. Like you have to go through platform cert and all that sort of stuff, and everything has to be tested. So yeah, we do work on stuff quite a long time in advance.
Fantastic. You also said you're going to look at underused or underpowered exotics. You're going to be taking a pass at some of them. This includes Arbalest, Serastream, Cryosthesia, which we talked about already, Malfeasance, and more. If you have issues with spamming high rate of fire semi-automatic weapons as fast as possible, we've got something in the works for you. Can you talk about what that something is, or is that still in so much flux that it's not a good idea to mention the specifics of it yet?
I can't get into specifics for it yet, but basically we've seen a lot of comments about how hard it is to rapid fire, you know, like the fast rate of fire sidearms and that kind of thing. And yeah, we feel like it's time to kind of make an accessibility change there, or at least dip our toe in the water.
It's probably a great idea. I think that would be a very pleasant change for a lot of people.
You don't have to answer, but I was going to ask if you're going to give us the option to toggle firing on and off. So we can just tap to make the gun start firing, tap to make it stop. You don't have to answer that.
You can nod or shake your head because nobody will be able to see the video. So they won't know, but yeah. No, we're not going to put you in that spot. DMG would probably kill both of us if that were to happen.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we'll leave that a mystery, what's going to happen. When I read that, that was what I thought, personally. It was like, oh, maybe they're going to add a toggle, because that would be cool. But anyway, we'll find out when we find out. And we've already talked about swap speed, so I don't think we need to hit that point again. That's something that you guys are working at building towards. Maybe you do need to hit that.
I think we do need to hit this again. This is kind of like the ominous like tack on the very last thing that you said. So you're saying priming a target and quickly swapping for cleanup is easier than we'd like. We're looking at options towards building towards faster swap speeds and hitting both of these points coming up. So when you're talking about priming a target and quickly swapping, are you mostly talking about special to primary?
Not talking about anything specific at this point. Like, I'm being deliberately vague. but basically, it's one of those things where there are ways of doing that quickly for almost free. And we would like you to have to build a bit harder to get there. Like, we think it's okay that people can quickly swap, but there has to be some sort of cost to it.
That is most likely going to generate a significant amount of unhappy people who love swapping weapons quickly. I can tell you that much right now. I think that's a dangerous game to play, a fine line to walk. Now, you took away people's glitch that they used to do it, which wasn't even an intended mechanic in a game. And so Interesting. A bit ominous, a bit of an ominous end to the thing. Obviously, you talk more that there's going to be a lot more stuff in the Witch Queen and beyond. And you guys are holding some stuff from Season of the Redacted Cliffs to the chest for now. But you did want to show off a couple new weapons that you're going to be bringing out.
I want to say before we get to that, I am very excited about any system that you might ship to give legendary weapons a little more identity based on their source. This is something that we have been harping on that bugs us since probably close to launch of Destiny 2. There's a lot of weapons that seem like they should have an identity, and they just feel a little lost in the whirlpool. So very excited to see that that's on your guys' radar.
Actually going to be one of the questions that we have too.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'll hold off and answer the question then.
I mean, I guess we should do our normal thing where we like grade the sandbox changes that are upcoming. So on the whole, I feel like all three TWABs in a row have been this way, where I'm like 90%, hell yeah. And like 10%, I'm like, nah, you know, we'll have to see. Right, we'll have to see how some stuff, but I think on the whole, it's all moving in the right direction.
I every time you say that, I can't help but think in my head, I hear, would you say Preparation H does it for you? I'm sorry.
On the whole?
Oh, no.
On the whole.
Well, shit, now I can't ever say that again.
That's so bad.
I may have watched Austin Powers too many times when I was younger. That's a reference that the kindergartens won't get, but we get it. So I'm happy to have ruined that phrase for you because you were ruining my life every time you said it. And you say it a lot.
Why did you point it out like 10 episodes ago? So I would have stopped saying it now.
I was really trying hard to let it go, and then you said it twice, and I just couldn't All anymore. Right. I couldn't live with it. So
I'm gonna have to figure out another way to say that now.
So overall, I would say I'm very happy with the weapon changes, and I'm not saying that just because you're here, Chris. I don't think there's anything that's come out of this where I'm like, that does not make sense to me, or I think this was the wrong move. So good work.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think like there are some changes there that I'm personally a little worried about, and like on the weapons team we're kind of worried about. But the nice thing is like we're staffed to be able to make these kinds of changes with a little bit higher frequency. So if something goes out the door and we're not happy with how it lands, we can revisit it like mid-season or next season.
Are you more concerned about things being overpowered compared to being underpowered? I mean, I feel like it sucks to nerf someone's favorite toy, but I feel like it's almost worse to put something out there that becomes meta-defining in a negative way.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to the hard light meta in season 11. Like, it's way more urgent to nerf outliers. But I feel much worse about nerfing people's babies.
Yeah, I feel that. I just got Bastion nerfed. And, you know, I think that a lot of people would assume that that is the one thing I disagree with here. I actually don't. I actually agree that that was probably a needed change now that shotguns have come down enough and other fusion rifles are changing. I think Bastion probably needed it. It had its time to shine. I would honestly say that the only thing I have a bit of trepidation about is I want to see the way Vex Mythic class plays in PvP. I think it might be strong. I'm not going to say broken, but I think it might be strong. And I have some trepidation about the future tense of priming and quickly swapping type of thing that you guys are looking at. I'm a little bit on edge about that. We kind of just went through something with Sprint similar to this, which is not your area at all. So it had nothing to do with you. But for our listeners, they know we talked about this, where I wasn't a huge fan of the Sprint changes, or the slide changes, sorry.
Slide changes,
I wasn't a huge fan of the slide changes because I felt like it was something that had become such an integral part of the game and that everybody across all skill levels was doing because it was so easy to do that you end up taking away that thing from everyone. and you give them a way to get back to it, but you're basically giving them a cost with no benefit, right? So it's like with slide now, like I can negate some of the slide changes that they made, but I'm now building in to get something that I already had. And it'd be different if it was like 1% of players doing it, but I'm pretty sure a vast majority of players slide. And I'm also pretty sure that a lot of players prime and swap weapons. And so my, you know, I just, I have a little bit of trepidation, but the good news is that's not this update. That's a future time, way in the future. As far as this update goes, I'm feeling really positive about the changes.
I just a question on the slide changes. So I do agree that everyone at all skill levels slides. But the slide changes specifically target shooting while sliding. Do you think it's accurate to say that people across all skill levels can shoot accurately while sliding? So I'm not sure that's the case.
I wouldn't say at all skill levels. I would say that there is, and I've literally used this example before, but I feel like it is the first elusive strategy that players use, that players learn, right? So I'm not saying 100% of players do it, but I think as, you know, every player learns to stand still and shoot, and then every player learns to walk and shoot, right? And then every player learns to run, and then the thing that immediately follows that is every player learns to slide and shoot. So I think that there is a majority of players that are capable of sliding and shooting. And you guys touch shotgun specifically, which is by far the easiest one to slide and shoot with. And so if it had just been that, I think I would have been like, okay, well, shotguns are still really strong even after the nerf. Like, I kind of see why they're doing this. It's a very popular strategy. But it was much like the quick draw nerf, which, again, you guys came back and explained the quick draw nerf to us, why you did it, because it was ubiquitous. It wasn't just on shotguns. But it feels like it's a lot of punishment for something that has, I don't know, it just, it feels like the punishment's a bit high for what it is. You know, I'm personally, it's like, I'm a Kickstart Fusion guy. Well, Kickstart is now like way worse of a perk. And it wasn't a great perk. It was like a pretty good perk, but it wasn't like a world beating perk before that.
On the plus side, if you're using a high impact, you're not going to fire before you finish the slide anyway, right. So you won't face those penalties. You'll get the benefit of if kickstart without the downsides.
Well, will I though? Because kickstart's timer is pretty quick. Like,
it's
with how
pretty
slow,
quick. It's pretty
yeah.
Quick.
So it might not even. I might not get any of it at all anymore. But
yeah, I will say about those. And like as you say, it's not really my area. But we play tested it a lot, and it doesn't feel as extreme as the numbers make it look. Like we might end up with it being like the mouse and keyboard recoil changes from a while back, where they look really scary, but they're not that bad. But next week, I guess.
Yeah, that was a great example, because that was a thing that for sure everybody had to eat a little bit of crow when they were saying the world's going to end, mouse and keyboard is ruined, and then it turned out nobody could even really tell the difference.
Yep. Although I will say that people are building for stability more on mouse and keyboard, like, you know, anecdotally. They're picking perks, stability on hand cannons and that kind of thing, which wasn't the case before.
Well, cool. This other stuff doesn't really have anything to do with sandbox balance, but there's a ton of new weapons coming out that you guys have shown us. Some really, really cool looking ones and some reprised ones that really are coming back. And I think really from my favorite set, but you guys are bringing some of the Trials of the Nine weapons back.
Yeah.
For Prophecy, the Dungeon, which just totally thematically makes sense. I gotta ask, pulse rifle, what is it? Tell me everything about it.
man, I don't even remember which one that is.
Is it Relentless, or is it, was it Darkest Below? Was that the other one?
Darkest Before. It's Darkest Before.
Darkest Before. Okay, so it's the Rapid Fire.
Yep.
Ooh.
I'm not mad about that.
No, Rapid Fires are quite lovely right now.
I might have used Darkest Before quite a bit, many moons ago. So I'm pretty excited. The Trials of the Nine weapons were always just beautiful guns, and they look just as beautiful as I remember them.
Yeah, like they're such cool guns, and like we're never going to bring Trials of the Nine back. When are we ever going to get to use these? Like, oh, there's a dungeon which is nine themed. We should do that. By the time we realized that was an option. Season 11 and Prophecy had already shipped, and you don't ship a thing with a bunch of rewards in it and then change them the next season. So we ended up waiting until now, which is a year after that. which seems like a good time.
Definitely, definitely feels like it's going to be time for me to jump back into Prophecy and start trying to get that solo finish again.
Nice. Such a cool dungeon.
It's very cool. And these guns are going to make it even cooler. Let's see what else. Gosh, a lot of pretty weapons coming back here.
World weapons coming back. Some old favorites. Looks like Scathelock. A new aggressive. I believe that's an aggressive pulse rifle. The new Monarchy one, or is that?
Yeah, it's the new Monarchy one.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Well, I think that's it for the TWAB. We do have a QA that we're going to burn through pretty quick so we don't waste all of Chris's time here tonight. But before we're done, do you have anything else you want to say about the weapon balance? Do you want to say anything you want? Do you want to assuage the fans that all is going to be well? Do you want to tell them that it's your mission to destroy all the fun they have in PvP? I mean, anything at all?
I mean, I said this before, but just to reiterate, like, we do plan to revisit all of this stuff. We will take, we'll make some changes that we think are pretty good and some others that are more speculative. And if they don't work out, we'll change them later. And I think we're now staffed such that we don't just have to hit things with the Nerf bat when something's out of balance. We have more time to go in and buff things. So, like, if we hit anything too hard, we're likely to need to bring it up again. And there's like a big list of exotics that we're touching next season, for example. So,
do you feel that weapon balance in PvP is at a relatively passable place right now? We can even discount special weapons and say primary weapons. Do you feel like the highs are not too high at this point in time?
I think largely yes. Yeah, I don't think there's anything which is such a big outlier that it needs, like, it urgently needs to change. And I think there are some weapons that are always going to be high, right? Like, it doesn't matter how much hand cannons were nerfed in the past. They were always the most popular weapon. And so I don't think there's a world where, like, hand cannons are 2% of usage or anything like that. I have sort of a general policy for balance changes. Like, if a... What's a way to frame this? Like, there's a pretty big range of values that I'm happy with. Like, if a... weapon type has between 3% and 15% or 20% usage, I think that's fine. If it's like way below that, or it's like up to 30%, that will require a pretty urgent look, particularly on the high end. But we're not trying to like have every weapon type have symmetrical usage or anything like that.
Makes sense. We've talked about that before, but we don't think that that would be... the game would be in a very odd place if everything was being used.
Yeah.
It would be in a bad place as well, right? I think like shotguns are super high usage and they're strong and they're easy to play. But fundamentally, if you're a good player, particularly in their current state, you can play against them pretty well. And I don't think that's the case with other weapons. Like when sniper rifles were strong, they were extremely oppressive. And if, you know, grenade launchers got too high, and, you know, I know you love fusion rifles, but if fusion rifles got too high, they would be way more obnoxious than shotguns were. So I think I'm okay generally with the current state of specials. I'd like to see some stuff shift around a bit, but we're not aiming for, them to share the pie equally.
I mean, I'm a fusion guy, and even I understand that. I don't want to live in a fusion meta, despite the fact that I like using fusions. The reason why I like using fusions is because they counter shotguns. I don't want to be trying to use fusions to counter other fusions. Like, you know, when D1 was a thing and we did very briefly have a fusion meta early in that, like I took up sniping because that was what I wanted to do. Right. So I entirely understand that. I've said that I think the game is the healthiest when shotguns have the largest share of special weapons use. Like it keeps the pace of the game relatively high because people play more aggressive. And I think that that's good for a PvP game. Obviously, if you end up with a scout rifle meta, like the pace of the game slows immensely, and that's no fun for anyone. I think pulse rifles sit in a spot where they're like kind of a happy medium, but even pulse rifles can be slightly annoying if you end up with a full team of six people on the other side just laning the whole day.
Yeah, 100%. Particularly on the scout rifles thing. Like I would like there to be more situations where a scout rifle is a good choice, but I don't want there to be a situation where scout rifles are a good choice on all maps. We just need some maps.
be nice to have some maps, but again, not your thing. All right, cool. Well, ready for Q&A?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
So we're going to start with questions about stats. So that includes stability, recoil direction, accuracy, and flinch. The first one is my personal question that I've been trying to get answered for a very long time. But stability, how does it work? is there an effect on aim assist? Does stability have an effect on aim assist? And for the love of God, prove me right, because I've been preaching this for a long time.
Yeah, so the longer you fire a weapon for, the more its aim assist degrades. Like the aim assist cone will get narrower over time. And stability reduces the rate at which that happens.
Miracle of all miracles. I cannot tell you how nervous I was to actually hear those words.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Because I had always thought, I think, that it was reducing the time it takes it to reset. But if it's just reducing the rate at which it blows out, then it would be resetting faster because it's not as far gone. So that lines up. All right.
Was that something that you knew before I asked you to go look it up? Or was that like buried so deep into the archives of how Destiny was made that it was just like a thing?
Yeah, I had to get my torch and go deep down into the dusty data archives and ask some engineers.
It's like Rey finding Luke's lightsaber.
Yeah. That,
you had a bunch of crazy visions while you're walking down there of Sage and Noosk and Hamrick yelling things at you.
Yep.
All right. Is there any effect from stability on a weapon's first shot?
For almost all weapons, no. But for bows, yes.
Oh.
And this was interesting. I had to talk to Greg about this again, and I looked through all of the bow data. Stability reduces the reticle shake that you get if you hold past perfect draw. And it increases the forgiveness time for perfect draw and how long you can hold a bow before it fires.
What?
Wow. Yep. Okay.
Wow. I swear to you, every person on Earth, myself included, thought stability was useless on bows.
Yeah, it's a dump stat.
Wow.
But it actually does a lot. I actually want to play with them a bit more, having looked into it.
Wow, that's huge. Okay.
If I wasn't a hunter main, I would really care about that now.
So Oathkeepers, right? Lamonarch, it makes it real nice. Please don't nerf Oathkeepers or Lamonarch. Those are so... I'm so much enjoying those. And the usage numbers are not high, so it's fine.
Oh, it's so niche, yeah.
Yeah, but does it affect all weapons the same way regardless of weapon type? Well, you just told us that it doesn't. So that's actually fantastic. But for weapons that are, for weapons that have conventional stability, not bow stability, are like auto rifles affected the same by the stability stat, that pulse rifles are affected, that scout rifles are affected, or does it do anything different per weapon type besides bows, which are the most surprising thing I've heard all night?
No, it works basically the same way on everything else. They just have custom tables for stability, so like different number of shots to like hit max recoil and all that sort of stuff. I will say though that like since it directly affects how much kick you get on a weapon, I feel like it's underappreciated on certain weapon types. Like anything that has a lot of kick, you would actually notice quite a big benefit from stability.
We talked about Zen Moment before in conjunction with stability. So stability is actually, it decreases how much your gun jumps per shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zen Moment does what again?
So stability has a whole bunch of effects. And Zen Moment just targets just the maximum recoil angle. And it compresses that a lot, but it doesn't do all the other stuff that stability does.
So your maximum recoil angle, you're not guaranteed to hit that every single shot, right? Like you just could hit it, or you're going to hit it after X amount of shots, depending on the weapon.
Yeah, it's stability dependent.
Okay, interesting. Well, gotcha. You want to just bounce back and forth? We can just alternate questions.
Yeah, let's do it. So related question here, very related. Recoil direction, how does it work? We have reports that it feels a little bit random, even if you have it maxed out at 100. And, you know, I guess there's sort of a question, you know, as far as perks like heating up or firmly planted, other perks that affect recoil direction, if you've already got 100 recoil direction, what's, you know, are those perks just not providing that benefit then? Or are they applying a scaler? What light can you shed here?
So yeah, there's always randomness in recoil. Even if you're at 100, like the tendency to go vertical is much higher, but there's still some randomness. It'll still bounce around a little bit. So yeah, if you've got a perk like Heating Up, that just sets the stat. And so that can't go past 100. The other effects will continue to have an effect, of course.
Okay.
So it does cap at 100. It's just done at 100. You can't go to 105 or anything like that. Okay.
No, all weapon stats cap at 100. Just on the note about Heating Up, actually, I realized while I was looking into accuracy stuff that I had misstated its effect when we were talking about it on firing range. I mentioned that it grants minus 15 accuracy cone angle, or minus 15% accuracy cone angle per stack, but it's actually minus 15% accuracy cone growth per stack. So it, related to the stability stuff, as you fire the weapon, your accuracy cone grows, so your bullets will spread out a bit more, and Heating Up will reduce how quickly that happens, rather than directly compressing the cone.
So it counteracts bloom.
In effect, yeah.
In the community's terminology.
Yeah.
What is projectile accuracy, and is it a stat that differs by archetype, by individual weapon? For example, would the projectile accuracy values of popular archetypes or weapons, what are the projectile accuracy values of a popular archetype or weapon? And what additional amount of projectile accuracy do accuracy granting perks or mods give?
So the accuracy cone determines how far off target a bullet can land when you fire. It varies by weapon archetype. Bows are the only weapon that has an accuracy stat. Other weapons don't have a hidden one or anything like that. But the range stat is used to determine the accuracy cone in those cases. So the higher your range stat, the smaller your accuracy cone will be. And looking at hand cannons, yes, I did look up this data in advance. At zero range, they have a 0.55 degree accuracy cone. At 100 range, it's 0.3 degrees. And then that's multiplied when you aim down sights. So it's 1.2 multiplier for ADS at zero range, 0.99 at 100 range. By contrast, sniper rifles at zero range have a 9 degree accuracy cone, which, like, you would have trouble hitting the broadside of a barn. At 100, it's 6.5, and in ADS, it's multiplied by 0.03 at zero range. And at 100, it's multiplied by 0. So if you have 100 range on a sniper rifle, your bullet goes exactly where you're aiming.
Okay, so that is the accuracy cone, mm-hmm. which is how far away you said that a bullet can deflect were it to be inaccurate. What determines if a bullet will deflect instead of going... So, like, what determines it hitting the outside of that accuracy cone as opposed to just going in the center of the accuracy cone?
So it can hit anywhere inside the accuracy cone. It's just a random chance.
So it's just and
it
dice
can't
roll.
Land outside. Yeah, in effect. So the narrower that is, the more likely you are to be exactly on target.
But of course, aim assist kind of like overrides that when it's active because it, you know.
No, it's the other way around. Aim assist will correct your aim towards what you're aiming at, and then accuracy can deviate from that point.
So is there a way to directly affect the randomness, like the dice roll of the projectile with perks, or is it just tied directly into the accuracy cone itself?
Well, there are a lot of stats that grant accuracy. But there's nothing which just bypasses accuracy and changes that. Perks which will make it easier to hit your shots will be things that scale the accuracy cone directly, normally.
So the auto-aim term that you guys use makes a lot more sense to me now. So it's in effect, it's pointing the accuracy cone where you would have wanted it to be pointed, in theory,
yep.
at the target. And then you fire and the shot goes somewhere in that cone. But if that cone happens to be larger than the target, then maybe you miss anyway.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
I'm trying to think how to clarify this. Is the are the shots weighted with that dice roll to like be more likely to go where you're aiming, or is it literally entirely random? Like it could go anywhere in the cone. Or is like if I'm firing at a wall, like 9 out of 10 times it's gonna go straight, and then like one time it just like bounces off.
I believe it's just random. That's actually not something that I looked into deeply.
Oh, no worries. That literally came up because the answer to the question surprised me. I'm just trying to think. That's probably, I'm saying this now, like that's probably going to lead to a lot more questions in the future because that goes entirely counter to our understanding of how we thought it worked, which stems from a very long ago TWAB where I think it was Nusk actually said that there were two parts of accuracy. One was projectile, one was error angle. And previously, Eye of the Storm, was it? Had only affected projectile accuracy. And so you could not see the accuracy cone decrease in size. And so people thought it wasn't doing anything. And so he said, now it does both.
So I think this is the distinction between accuracy cone and cone growth. And like, I haven't looked it up, but I would bet that Eye of the Storm limits how quickly the accuracy cone can grow without changing the accuracy cone itself. Similar to heating up.
Interesting.
Well, I'm a little, the fact that operates backwards has really blown my mind. I guess it's not backwards. I guess the way we were thinking of it was backwards, but it's the reverse of what we thought. So,
yeah, I will also say that, man, the terminology stuff is very confusing because we don't use these terms internally. I'm trying to be consistent with what's been said in the past, but, like people have been talking about Destiny for, you know, whatever it is, 8 years or something. So it's a lot to try and be consistent with.
Yeah.
You totally don't blame you for every problem you solve for us. It introduces several more ones that we then have to figure out, right?
Okay. Well, I guess just along those lines, then, you know, you talked about range essentially being the stand-in stat for determining the accuracy cone for the majority of weapons. So, you know, and I guess I'm feeling like there's maybe some stat fruit space here where the stat doesn't always mean the same thing on every type of weapon. But effectively, is plus 10 to your range stat like I guess there is no accuracy stat. So that's effectively a plus 10 to accuracy. That's the question here is just is plus 10 range equivalent to plus 10 accuracy?
No, I mean, except on bows, plus 10 accuracy doesn't mean anything, right? Like, all of our stats are translated into, like, what we would call sandbox stats internally, where it's, like, actual parameters on the weapon.
Okay.
So, like, getting higher range stat translates into, like, directly manipulating the accuracy cone on the weapon.
Okay, so I feel like that probably is a yes.
Well, it's not one-to-one, right? Because there is no accuracy stat. And I think that's what he was asking. That's what the supposition was there's an accuracy stat. It's hidden from us. Plus one range equals plus one accuracy. And clearly that is not the way it works because accuracy is just a cone that, you know, changes with range. So it can't be one-to-one because range is a stat and accuracy is a cone. But how do you determine like the accuracy boost for targeting mods then, right? It just narrows the cone?
Yeah, those will be either scalars to the like the accuracy cone or the accuracy cone growth. I don't have the actual numbers for those to hand, so all of the mods are made by the armor team. I'm actually not sure how to find them.
Yeah, totally fine. Are there hidden stats? So there's the common thread here is that everybody thinks that there's hidden stats for everything, and that's what like all these questions were. But are there hidden stats for flinch dealt and received? If so, how do explosive rounds and time payload affect these? If so, also, do different weapons in the same class have different values? Like, for example, does Frozen Orbit have a different flinch received value than Occluded Finality does?
So there isn't a flinch stat as we would normally talk about stats. Like when we say weapon stats externally, we're talking about the stuff that you see in the inspection screen or the ones that you see when you look at it in light.gg or whatever, right? Like the weapon stats. Flinch doesn't have one of those, but every projectile in the game has its own flinch values. which is determined by the weapon type, and it's scaled by the damage per bullet. For the like sub questions, explosive payload adds an additional damage impulse, which has its own flinch on top of that. So it's getting like two flinch events at the exact same time. Also scaled by damage. Timed payload does the exact same thing as that, except that the extra damage impulse is delayed by a fraction of a second. And then flinch tends to kick your aim towards the source of the damage, but is heavily randomized on top of that. And then on top of that, every weapon archetype has a scalar that it applies to received flinch. So you'll remember when I increased the flinch received by sniper rifles in PvP, I was changing that value on sniper rifles.
Okay.
Mostly that scalar is unused, but yeah, it is there for and used in some weapons. And I have an example here. These numbers are meaningless, right, except as a way of comparing them to each other, but a hand cannon bullet applies 170 flinch, a high caliber round is 185, explosive or timed payload is another damage impulse with another 100 flinch.
And so just to hit that last point, so like Frozen Orbit and Occluded Finality do not have different flinch values. They are the same archetype, firing the same projectile. If the perks are all the same, their flinch is going. Their flinch received and their flinch dealt is going to be the same.
Yeah, if they're doing the same amount of damage, the flinch should be the same.
That was a good answer.
Okay, all right, I like it. So that I think is all the stat questions that we had. So let's try to maybe roll through some perk questions quickly here. And so this first one, question near and dear to my heart. Can you give details on what opening shot and firmly planted do as far as accuracy, aim assist, exactly what they're doing to the gun?
So opening shot gives you plus 20 to the aim assist and range stats, and then a scalar of 5% to damage fall off start and end. Minus 5% on the accuracy cone, and minus 10% on accuracy cone growth. And firmly planted is plus 30 handling, plus 20 stability, minus 40% accuracy cone, minus 17% accuracy cone growth, and also, and it might be the only perk that does this, minus 80% recoil yaw, which is basically horizontal recoil.
It doesn't actually affect the recoil direction stat. It changes the recoil yaw to make the recoil basically straight up vertical.
Yep, exactly.
That is super neat. What is the bonus from the high impact weapon frame? The person who asked this question says, is it the exact same as take a knee from D1?
So while stationary or moving slowly and aiming down sights, minus 20% accuracy cone, minus 17% accuracy cone growth, and take a knee required crouching and being stationary and gave totally different bonuses.
Yeah, take a knee was firmly planted, but probably not as good.
Yeah. I think they was asking, is it the same bonuses
right.
from D1, not the same trigger?
Yeah, it's neither.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't give the same bonuses, doesn't have the same trigger.
Darn it, Gilly. Maybe slip that question in there right at the end.
Easy one to answer.
So here's a question that I'm also very curious about. Generally, do you feel that hip fire, including with mods like free hand grip, for example, is in a good place right now, or could you see adding more encouragement for hip fire play, like you did with Dead Man's Tale, where hip fire was a core part of the weapon's identity?
So a lot of us do like firing guns, like sandbox designers, generally. And that's why on the weapons team we made Dead Man's Tale's Catalyst do its thing, and why we keep buffing hipfire grip. I think that for the current state of Destiny, hipfire is in a pretty good place, but the game is very much built around aim down sights. There's a whole bunch of functionality that assumes that you'll be fighting while aiming. I could see us maybe reducing the penalties for hip firing in the future, and I like hip firing. I would go for that. It's not something that we can pivot on super quickly. I think it's more likely that we would give you more tools to build towards it than that we would just globally make hip firing more more easy, you know. It's a pretty common topic when we're talking inside Sandbox, though, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that we adjust later.
Awesome.
Can you elaborate on your thoughts on barrels versus scopes? It seems that everything with a selectable scope is year one or a reprised weapon. Is it an intentional choice to limit them?
Yes, it is an intentional choice. We do like scopes, and we like swapping bits of geometry on weapons in general. It's super cool, and like system designers love that sort of stuff. But it's a lot of artist time. They have to build all of the pieces. Every combination of pieces has to work. Every scope needs custom holo UI work. And at the end of the day, it also doesn't really let you make weapons that feel new to players. Like, the ideal would be you can just slap a bunch of pieces together and you have a new weapon, and people go, yay, it's a new weapon, but they don't do that. So it's expensive, and looking at the bigger picture, we would rather spend those art bucks making a larger quantity of unique-looking guns than making a bunch of extra scopes. The other side of this is, it seems to me at least, every weapon that has selectable scopes has one best scope, which everyone wants. In which case, why not just make the weapon with that best scope built in, and not make the others that people trash the gun for? We've started, when we reprise weapons or whatever, giving them a fixed scope, because otherwise, if we bring back a year one weapon, it's going to be automatically better than everything that's in the game right now, because you can get whatever scope you want. But it's also why we've started varying the base zoom on certain weapons, like starting in Season 11, as far as I'm aware. Like, Cold Denial has a shorter zoom than every other pulse rifle, and Shayura's Wrath is like one of the highest zoom submachine guns in the game. And you'll start to see a lot more variation along that as well.
Okay.
We have actually toyed with the idea of letting us get some of the advantages of scopes by making, like, occasionally on weapons, swapping out the barrels column for an optics column and letting you just directly manipulate the zoom by selecting those things. We haven't found a super good use case for it yet, but it's something that we might do later.
A really neat idea. I think that'd be very cool, honestly, because I mean, zoom can make or break certain guns.
Yeah.
And you've seen it with Shayera's now, how popular of a submachine gun it is. I don't think it would be that popular without that zoom.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, we've shipped, like, the standard submachine gun zoom is 13, right? And no one wants to use a 13 zoom submachine gun.
Well, I have to say, I'm definitely going to be paying a lot more attention to the zoom stats on weapons going forward now. So,
I know, which sucks, because I'm going to have to include that in the spreadsheet now. And it's going to be like, it's going to be like 99.9% of weapons have normal zoom, and then like one weapon per class has different zoom. I might actually just put like a flag in there that's like abnormal zoom.
You could just asterisk it in. Yeah. So we're into general questions now. So we've heard the concept of pillars underlying development decisions from your colleagues in the past. What, if any, pillars underlie weapon development decisions, such as deciding whether to bring out a new weapon type or how to tweak existing weapons?
So we do have pillars. Like, Destiny has pillars, Sandbox has pillars, and there are weapons pillars as well. The weapons pillars haven't actually been updated since 2016, and the game is radically different now. So, like, if we were to update them, that'd probably be a bit different. That said, yeah, I can list off some of the ones that are still relevant. There's a couple of them and not anymore.
Okay.
So we're making the best shooting experience in video games. You know, it's a player's weapon is their primary expression vector into the world. Every weapon we build should feel powerful. All of the feedback vectors are critical and can never have enough polish. Second one, weapon choice reflects player choice. A player's favorite gun is expressive. We want players to feel like they have options and they represent different playstyles. We think this is still largely true in PvP. It's less so in hard PvE, partly because champion mods and partly certain weapons just don't work when you're taking that much damage. Function and then flair. Like, I haven't been at Bungie that long, but it seems to me that everything we make, we're always doing the gameplay first. We get the gameplay fundamentals right, and then we start to look to polish and make the art. This also comes to weapons looking and feeling different and grounded. So we don't have much in the way of really fantastical weapons. We have some pretty weird experimental-looking weapons, but they all feel like physical objects. Which is, like, a big part of why Destiny feels so familiar and everything feels like it belongs. When weapons should always deliver a fantasy. Exotics obviously focus on a single really potent experience. And we'll have, like, an emotional fantasy and a gameplay fantasy that we're trying to deliver with that. Dead Man's Tale, the emotional fantasy was, I want to be a badass cowboy hip-firing headshots at the bad guys. And the gameplay fantasy is sort of related, but, like, more mechanical in nature, right? Like, I am pacing my shots in hip-fire, because if I shoot too fast, I'll start to get inaccurate. And, like, timing my reloads, because it takes a really long time to reload the gun, that sort of stuff. Weapon archetypes, though, focus on playstyle and player identity. So things like, I am a sharpshooter, and that will determine your weapon choice. And that's about all I've got that is still relevant. I think if we were to look at them again now, we would lean more into like player-directed weapon chase, and more about weapon acquisition and build crafting and that kind of thing, which wasn't so much a thing at launch.
Very interesting. That actually kind of leads me, I'm going to hop over one question because you kind of touched on it there. One of our questions was from someone who says, I personally feel like 5 or 6 subtypes per weapon, meaning sidearms, pulse rifles, fusion rifles, no longer an example of this because you just changed them so dramatically. But he said, it might be a little too much. Some subtypes just don't see use because they seem so similar, but perhaps slightly less effective. I'm just wondering if there's any consideration given to further condensing subtypes, like what was done with hand cannons. Or I suppose the alternative to that would be differentiating them like what you just did with fusion rifles.
We definitely agree. Certain weapon types have way too many subfamilies. It's ridiculous. Like submachine guns have, 6 or something? Pulse rifles have 6? Some don't see use because they're so similar. Yep, that's 100% correct. You may notice, though, that we've stopped making certain of the subfamilies. You haven't seen, for example, an adaptive submachine gun in a while. There aren't that very, very many lightweight pulse rifles. And what we've been doing is looking at the underperforming ones and just stopped making them. And that's a much easier path. It's not that much work to just say, well, we'll just make a high impact or a rapid fire instead, right? Collapsing subfamilies into one another like we did with hand cannons is an enormous amount of work. That was like weeks of designer time. And it has this huge risk because in doing it, you're touching stuff that's in players' inventories. And so if you mess it up, it may not be recoverable. Like you might just balk someone's inventory, right? Not that that's happened a huge number of times. It has happened once or twice. But if we don't have to, we're not going to do that additional work and we're not going to take that extra risk.
That entirely makes sense.
Also, in the case of hand cannons, right? Like, if we had just said we're not making more lightweight hand cannons, that wouldn't have done anything because everyone already had their lightweight hand cannons. We kind of had to do it in that case.
Right. Yeah. Hand cannons were already popular, and there were a lot of them available. So you guys were definitely in a pickle there.
It was a very hardcore contingent of lightweight pulse rifle fans that you just upset greatly. They were waiting for their lightweight pulse rifles to come back from Oblivion, and you've just told them that no. Sorry, man.
They should keep an eye on the next few seasons, but I think we've turned a corner on that. We had stopped making them, but I think we're going to be bringing some back soon.
You just made that same condition very happy. So
it's a roller coaster right there.
Yep.
All right, I think we've kind of got a few fun questions to wrap things up here. So this one feels pretty relevant as we're getting toward the end of the show. What made your team and you personally decide to start engaging more directly with the Destiny community, taking the time to join shows like Massive Breakdowns, I don't know if you want to elaborate on that or share your personal feelings about it.
Yeah, so different developers have different comfort levels with engaging directly with the community like this, but it's important that no game developer should feel pressure to be visible. Like, I think a lot of people can, you know, come under attack for, you know, putting a foot wrong, or like for just looking the wrong way, or, you know, this kind of thing. So it's definitely not for everyone. I'm not a community manager. I'm actually not that comfortable being in the spotlight. Like, I did my 1 hour's PR training at Bungie, and that's it. My job is making sure we deliver the best possible weapons for Destiny that we can. That said, I think that understanding what the community feels about your game by, you know, reading Reddit or Twitter or watching YouTube videos, or like we send out polls and that kind of thing, that helps. I also think that explaining the reasoning behind changes in a TWAB where it's clear that it's coming from an actual person, like that's why I put my name on it. It's not like some collective writing this stuff. It helps, and players are more likely to accept big changes to the game or nerfs if we can take the time to explain why we believe they're needed. And some of these changes are complex enough that, like, talking to people on podcasts or, like, engaging with them on Twitter is super useful. Like, there have been a ton of clarifying questions here that I think will actually help people understand what the hell we're talking about. Like, I didn't intend to write an 8-page screed with all of the weapon balance notes on it, and some of them are very confusing. So engaging with the community is a way to make sure that you get the point across. But, yeah, well, it isn't and shouldn't be a required part of any developer's job. I think that if people are willing, it makes the game better. Like, it makes me better at my job to do this. And it could reach a point where it's such a big distraction that it makes me worse at the other parts of my job. But as long as it doesn't do that, I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, we won't make you be a weekly guest. We don't want to take too much of your time. But... yeah, the rest of the questions that we've got are just some super fun questions that people in our Discord wanted to submit that are, you know, easy ones. So if you guys are looking for a thing hard hitting in the rest of the podcast, this isn't going to be it. Wanted to end it on a fun note. So what are some of your favorite weapons to use in the Crucible that are just plain fun, not necessarily for competitive PvP?
Well, I'm just going to pour myself another drink.
There we go.
I like it.
So, double SMGs with Peacekeepers is a Titan main. That is just a ridiculous amount of fun. I have a max stability blast furnace with the Rasmussen ISA scope, which is a ton of fun. Cloud Strike, I am terrible at sniping, but that dopamine hit when you get a collat is incredible. I also really enjoy playing with anything that I made, particularly Dead Man's Tale, Duality, and Traveler's Chosen. Just because I spend so much time building those things, I'm just intimately familiar with their feel. Like, it feels like coming home to use one of those. Although on the flip side, being repeatedly killed by a weapon that I made is really galling. I feel like I should be immune to them. I die a lot to Dead Man's Tale in the Crucible. It's obnoxious.
You build a secret perk into it that's looking for a flag of what your gamer tag is, and it just does no damage. It just misses.
Making notes.
Okay, so along those lines, talking about things you've made, what is the weapon perk you are most proud of in the sandbox? And then a follow-up, are there any recent perks that landed higher or lower than intended? And if so, do you have any plans to tweak them going forward?
Yeah, so I think for perks that I'm proud of the whole team for building, I think... Tunnel Vision and Heating Up and Frenzy are all really cool, unique takes on perks, exploring design space that we'd never done before. So I thought that was really neat. I do really like as well how Tunnel Vision and Heating Up directly map onto Kill Clip and Rampage. Like, those are obviously built to pair together. I think that's really clever. I didn't build any of those, so I'm not talking myself up. For the ones I made personally, I think the most popular one that I've made is Killing Wind. But I think the stupid idea that I had, what if I made Dragonfly, but I took the precision requirement off it and put it on heavy weapons? That's probably the most fun that I've had making a perk, and that was Chain Reaction. I shouldn't have put it on a breach grenade launcher, but at least it doesn't also have blinding grenades. To the second part of the question, yeah, I mean, we touch perks in every release now. I think that we've started to see the value in updating stuff once it's shipped. The general theme for this will be, if something gives away a very large benefit for very low effort, we're likely to come back and adjust it like that we did with Quick Draw. And likewise, if there are perks that are unpopular but cool, and like there's some sort of fantasy there that we think it's valuable to try and reinforce, we'll come back and do it again. So Adrenaline Junkie, I would be surprised if we didn't touch that sometime in the future. Sometimes we'll just let a perk die. Like, I mean, we're not bringing Air Assault back ever. That's just a terrible perk. It doesn't fulfill anyone's fantasy.
Guerrilla Fighter can use the cover system.
Guerrilla Fighter. Oh boy. Yeah, that was kind of jank.
There's the cover system.
Yeah.
So yeah, actually, 80% it's of the players cool. listening. Pretty cool when it works, right?
Like it's a great system. It just is, yeah, it's like, what?
Cover isn't built to metrics that let you use it reliably. But yeah, it's cool when it does work. Yeah, I think also we'll probably see us moving some columns out of the right column. Or sorry, moving some perks out of right column into left column. Because they can't compete with the damage perks, but they'd be great in left column. And maybe we turn them down a little bit and they fit in there.
Is that kind of how you try to sort perks, right? Like, what's the ruling for left or right column for perks? It's not entirely random. Like, there is a system to it, right?
There is, yeah. And it's... So we have guidelines for this as well. Left column tends to be utility and reload stuff. And right column is damage and really big benefits. Or something that you really, really want on a gun. And the guidelines generally are, for almost all weapons, you obey those rules. And then for, like, trials or raid weapons, you can break them a little bit. So
like, you can, like, put strong stuff in both columns with the potential of a...
Explosive payload frenzy or something on Fatebringer. Or, like, yeah, we do other combos that we don't normally allow on, like, really top-tier stuff.
Killclip Rampage, which... was one of the raid weapons I think from Last Wish could roll that, and then it turns out it doesn't actually really work super great together, but
people like big damage numbers. Well, yeah, like Kindled Orchid from Black Armory. I'm not personally fond of putting double damage perks on weapons. I think that can lead to some pretty degenerate builds, but I think like other perks of that type, I think it's fun to combine.
You guys ever going to revisit Megafauna? Whatever, the one from Oxygen?
Mega Neuro? No, I don't think so. I think we'd probably...
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of fun. I think that we're more likely to like revisit Dragonfly and Firefly, do something for them, rather than make a whole new perk.
This one is near and dear to my heart, and I don't know how much you can answer it, because it's future content, but is there a planned catalyst for Le Monarch that you can talk about? And if not... Meaning you have nothing planned at all, but you're just spitballing. What idea would you like to have for it?
So yeah, we've got some ideas. We don't have a specific release date, but we are going to ship one at some point. It's pretty strong already. Like, so I don't want to do a Trinity Ghoul style catalyst.
Right.
That would be pretty silly. I am curious though, like what you two would like to see and what like the community would like to see, aside from orb generation, right? Like, because everyone wants orb generation. We've got something in the works for that, but like functionality wise, like where is a hole or what could be reinforced on it?
Ooh. Well, let's see. I would love... My concern is like actually making it too strong. I already think Le Monarch is insanely strong as it is right now in the right hands, especially on a hunter who has Oathkeepers like myself. So I'm very concerned that if it like goes overboard and it's anything that's noticeable to someone getting killed by it, like it has the potential for creating an outcry along the lines of like grenade launchers and getting itself nerfed. So I would probably want something that makes it feel better to me, but would be very difficult for the person who I'm hitting with it to know that I'm getting a benefit from a perk. So I would love to see something like Opening Shot. I mean, it already has great accuracy, right? But like something like Opening Shot, or something like Archer's Tempo, so I could follow back up on it pretty quick. Like, and those are just perks that already exist. That's not anything that's super crazy. I think stuff that would just make it feel better for me, because it's already so incredibly good. Like, there are some other things that I'd be like, can I make it one tap really easily, and then I'm like, nah, that's going to get a nerf for a fact.
Yep.
I think I would be along the same lines. Like, just a nice accuracy buff. I mean, you already gave it an infinite ammo buff, so I can't be asking for that now. Really a nice accuracy buff just for those longer range shots to make sure that it goes where I want it to, because there are occasions with Le Monarch where I'm trying to snag a headshot from a very long distance, and I am certain that I was on their head, and it's still body shots. And I mean, that's a really small pain point, but if you're looking for pain points, that's mine, I think.
I think you could do something fun with the nanites that's kind of similar to Outbreak Perfected, right? Where they maybe have, you can do increased damage to something that's affected by the nanites, or maybe they have a wider swarm radius, or maybe there's like, if you kill something with a crit, there's like a larger nanite explosion that potentially, you know, increases the radius. So it's like a dragonfly, but for nanites. Like, I think stuff like that would be fun. And that actually might end up making it better in PvE.
Right.
Compared to PvP, where it's not going to have as much of an effect. And I think it's a much stronger PvP gun than it is PvP weapon than it is a PvE weapon.
Yeah, except when Overload Bow is in town.
Yeah. And well,
it's super great.
Overload Bow is everyone's favorite Overload. You guys, you know, it's the SMG Overload is like my absolute nightmare. It's like, I'm lucky if I still have ammo in the magazine when I have staggered a champion with Overload SMG.
Yeah, and you sort of hit on something with what you were saying earlier. Like, with weapons in general, it's important that they be fun to use but not unpleasant to play against. So, like, if we're going to buff something, making it fun for the user without making it shitty for everyone else is important. A PvE buff is great, right?
I had this argument with Hamrick about Armor Lock and Halo Reach. And he was like, but it was so fun. I was like, dude, it sucked to play against. It was the worst, man. And he was like, yeah, but it was so much fun. He's like, I'm the reason it wasn't just in campaign. And I was like, why? Why did you do that?
Funny.
It was a good conversation I had with him. He swore by Armor Lock, and I was like, man, that was my least favorite thing to play against in all of Halo Reach.
Okay. Let's see what we have left here. So is there a design goal when it comes to surfacing information about weapons to players? What are some of the limitations that exist around surfacing details about weapon perks and stats, both in-game and in-text descriptions? So I think when they're talking about surfacing information here, we're talking about in-game in terms of revealing numbers and stats and mechanics via perk text and tooltips and all that stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've talked pretty candidly about like perk numbers and stuff in the podcast here and on Firing Range. I'm fine with sharing those details, but it's complicated to do within the game because we don't have a system that would let us pull the numbers out of perks. You could imagine building one that just handled stats or whatever, but there are like hundreds of things that a perk can do numerically. So it's not something that you could easily add. So the problem would be if we put them in and we decide to change the perk a little bit later, like we want to increase the duration by half a second, or we want to increase the damage by 5%, we have to update the perk. The perk has to get looked at by the narrative team, and they have to send it to localization. And it's just this whole thing, which is super cumbersome to do and would result in us making fewer changes, which we really don't want.
You know, I'm going to be honest, I had not considered the localization issues that would be caused by surfacing additional information. That is one of those things I think you probably run into only when you're doing the job.
Yeah, it's just, it hurts. It's like the number, it would be great to have the numbers there. I think that it makes the game better when some of this stuff is exposed, but yeah, it's more complicated than it sounds to do.
Yeah. And there's going to be someone who's like, can't you just put them all on a table and just reference them? And it's like, not quite how development works, but.
Yeah, but then you're updating the data in two places as well, right? Like, it's, you're making yourself a maintenance problem.
All right, last question for tonight that is on the docket. What are your plans, if any, for addressing? Actually, this one kind of loops back around to being a more serious question. I'm not sure how this one got slotted in here at the end here. But what are your plans, if any, for addressing how weapons like The Last Word or DMT are much stronger on one input method than the other? Is the end goal to make them viable across both input methods?
So we definitely want like those two weapons in particular, and you know, all weapons in general, to be viable across both input methods. And viable is a good word for that. Like, I don't think they need to be similar usage necessarily, but it shouldn't feel like it's a terrible idea to run one in one input method over the other. We actually have pretty good tools for doing this across whole archetypes. Like, we can have mouse and keyboard scalers for certain things. And when we're doing it for exotics, though, it gets a lot more complicated. We have to duplicate a whole bunch of data and tune it differently. It's something that we want to do often enough that we might just ask for a better way to do it. It's just, you know, it's more engineering time and that kind of thing. I think, though, that we're getting into a place where weapons generally are like less different across input methods than they used to be, and particularly with the like controller sensitivity stuff that we brought in, like it's narrowed that difference a bit more.
I was gonna say it's not nearly as egregious as it once was. Like, it used to be you would never run some stuff on controller, you would never run some stuff on mouse and keyboard. I think The Last Word is obviously an outlier, and then I think it's probably the most egregious example right now.
Yeah.
But that was almost intended because of the way it was kind of working out to begin with. But I mean, it's not too bad, right? Like, SMGs I didn't ever used to see an SMG in console PvP, and now they're quite common. So clearly some of the stuff has been a success.
Yeah, I think The Last Word in particular is pretty tricky because if you let it feel the same on both, it just becomes super dominant on mouse and keyboard. Because if you can just point and click ahead, it fires so fast and kills so fast. It's tricky to balance it in a way. Like, I think we'll revisit it at some point, but Last Word is a tricky one.
Very cool. That is all the scheduled questions that we had. That's the entire TWAM that we've discussed. We're closing in on 3 hours here of time, which is easily going to be the longest episode we've ever had, but I can't imagine a better way to spend my Thursday evening than talking about weapons with you, Chris, and with you, Kutch. So I don't have anything else to add. Kutch, what about you?
No, man, it's really been fantastic. I don't often re-listen to an entire one of our episodes, but I feel like there are some notes that I missed taking because I wasn't ready for them. And I didn't want to eat up time constantly asking you to repeat. Yes, I saw you. I saw you writing. For anyone, you know, out there listening, the amount of time that Mercury spent looking down during this episode so he could take notes was significant. This was a good one. I very much appreciate you taking the time, Chris, to come and talk to us. Cannot wait to catch the replay of this. It's going to be a good one to re-listen to.
Yeah, this was absolutely my pleasure. And we'll try and set one of these up again sometime.
Oh, don't tease us like that. Don't make a guardian a promise you can't keep. Now, Chris, come on.
Nice reference. Yeah, I mean, they can't be super common, right? Because they're time consuming. But you know, every couple of seasons or something, why not?
All right. Well, on that incredibly generous promise that he's made to come back on the show, I think we can probably go ahead and wrap up this episode.
Or at least
thanks everybody for tuning in.
We can let Chris leave. We still have to do the housekeeping.
Oh, we do have housekeeping.
We got to thank our patrons. How about we save the reviews for next episode and we just thank the patrons because they're the ones who helped to make this all happen.
Let's do it.
But do you have the patron info pulled up now?
I do. Nice. Actually left the tab open.
Catch, how smart.
Do I have like 35 tabs open? Yeah, probably. But that's life in the 21st century. So big, big thank yous to some new patrons this week. We've got one anonymous patron. I don't have any kind of gamer tag or Discord name or anything to go with. So I'm just going to say thank you. and hope that you know who you are. We appreciate you. We've also got, oh boy, Xtantuphoria. Gonna go with that. Xtantuphoria, thank you so much for your pledge of support. Very generous. Oh, actually, shoot, it was Perpetrator. there was a different name right there, and I just am like,
all that work to pronounce the name, and it ends up being much easier.
Hard fail right there, but very much appreciate your generosity and support. And finally, Mike Blaze coming in, joining the patron train. Thank you so much for your pledge. Deeply appreciate it. I believe that is all of the new patrons for this week. If I missed you somehow, let me know, and we'll catch you next week. So, big shout out then due to Sponsor Crew. These Guardians are incredibly generous financially with the podcast, go above and beyond at a level that is truly massive. As usual, just in no particular order, we're going to go ahead and throw out some thank yous to Conquer King 420, ZenSoCal, ASCII and Monk, Deacon, The Shazzle, and A Solitary Bird. Thank you to all of them. Thank you to all of our ongoing patrons, who are truly too many to list out at this point. And thank you to you, our loyal listeners. We deeply appreciate your support, because your support is what has made this opportunity to talk to Chris about how weapons work possible. So thank you so much to all of you.
Seriously, how cool was this? All right. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace.